welcome to episode 41 of A Year-Long Conversation. Today's main theme is what is corruption, and we're going to kind of get into exactly what is corruption. It's also going to be Free Don Siegelman. The one thing we've been wanting to talk about for a long time is that the former governor of Alabama is in jail, and we believe he's there wrongly, and they should free him. Joining me, as always, is Boone, Alabama's Michael. So much to talk about. Begin with that riveting debate. Do we begin with Trump's campaign collapsing before our eyes?
I think we should start about why Trump's going to win the election in 2016.
Yeah, it's funny because for pretty much the entire conversation, we've been saying that Hillary was probably going to win. And then the last week, it's like actually coming true. And we're like, wait a minute now. It feels like they're pulling a trick on us. It feels like something's going to happen. Zeus is going to come down with a thunderbolt and strike her or something like that. There's going to be some kind of twist that stops this from happening. But that's the first question I have is, do you feel like we've been saying it's probably going to be Hillary? And then when they nominated Trump, I felt really good that it was going to be Hillary. And every single week it's gone more in her direction. But do you feel like she finally has it in the bag? Is it safe to call it for her now?
If not now, I don't know. I don't know what else could happen. Listening to Donald Trump, I mean, he's going after the entire Republican Party, saying that he's done with the world. He's on his own. I mean,
the last couple of days, he has attacked Paul Ryan. He's gone after some of the donors. He's gone after some people who endorsed him and then didn't. He's gone after John McCain. I don't know if he's running against Hillary or the Republican Party. Like, every other breath is like, Hillary sucks, but you know who really sucks? John fucking McCain, you know? And I mean, he's like really going after these people. He seems so all over the place. He really reminds me of, have you seen Goodfellas?
Yeah.
He's Ray Liotta in the last 30 minutes. Like, he's Ray Liotta in the 80s when he's on cocaine and he's running around and he thinks a helicopter's following him and Robert De Niro's trying to kill him and he doesn't know if his drug connect is setting him up. He don't know who to trust. He don't even know if his wife is on his side. They said last week that they don't even know if Ivanka Trump is still speaking to him. So his own daughter may not be taking his calls at this point. They're thinking that Melania Trump, not done a lot of interviews since that tape aired, and they're saying that after this race is over, she might divorce him. I don't know if this guy's got a friend in the world at this point.
Maybe his sons. I mean, you know, Dumb and Dumb.
Yeah, and Rudy Giuliani. But
even Chris Christie, like, I saw an interview with him where they were asking him about Trump's little stunt of bringing these accusers to the debate, and even Chris Christie was like, I don't think that was the right move for Trump. Like, even he's starting to question. No, I don't think he's going to, like, pull his support, but, I mean, at least he's coming around saying, okay, maybe this guy isn't the smartest in the world, like, he's got Mike Pence, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's something else, too, is that even during the debate, Trump and Mike Pence disagreed about something. And now a lot of the Republicans are saying Trump needs to step aside and let Mike Pence be the head of the ticket. This is the first time I can ever remember where a vice president is trying to stage a coup on a ticket before the damn election. I mean, there's a lot of rumors. VPs are always scheming to, you know, every time, this sounds like the plot of the 24 season or something.
Like, every time
you used to watch Scandal or 24, the VPs always, like, out to take the presidency somehow. That was in West Wing, Scandal, 24. This might be the first time it's actually true. I gotta be as fair as I can be. When I heard that tape, I was surprised that this is what's going to bring Trump down, to be honest with you. Like, when I heard it, I was like, this?
Yeah.
I was shocked that people are making this big a deal about it.
Yeah.
This tape's from 10 years ago, and Trump has said worse stuff 10 days ago. A couple of days before that tape aired, he was veterans that had PTSD and how they shouldn't have been in the war in the first place. I mean, like a week ago, and it was about veterans. He keeps calling it locker room talk. That's been his defense over and over again. Honestly, listening to it, it sounds like Trump is a guy who's trying to get Billy Bush to look up to him. Like, he wants this guy to think he's awesome. And it sounds like he's kind of bragging about something.
Yeah.
Like a fraternity almost is what it sounds like. Like, it's like, oh, I'll get one of the new brothers who's trying to place to the frat. I'll get him to see I'm the alpha stud on campus. The most remarkable thing about it is that Trump admits he struck out with a woman. Like, he admits that a woman finds him irresistible. When he says, oh, Nancy O'Dell, I tried to screw her, but I didn't get anywhere. He's admitting that a woman finds him resistible. So I thought that was noteworthy in and of itself.
Yeah. I think if it wouldn't have been for all the other, like, ridiculous comments he made on there, like, that'd probably be in the news cycle.
One of the first things I thought about was, how funny is it, though? Because, you know, Trump hates the Bushes. Like, he hates Jeb Bush. He hates George Bush. Yeah. How funny is it that a Bush is who brought him down? And it wasn't Jeb or George at the debate. It was Billy Bush just being his friend. Billy Bush is so fucking toxic that just by being Trump's friend, like, that's how he brought him down. And it's funny because all these serious newsmen, it's like, oh, is Anderson Cooper going to get him at the debate? Is Lester Holt going to ask him a tough question? Is Megyn Kelly going to? No, it was Billy fucking Bush from Access Hollywood. Like, that's the journalist. That's the Edward R. Murrow of our times. And it wasn't even like he was trying to bring him down. Like, he was just talking to him. He just said, hey, Trump, what do you think about that girl?
But do you think that he was secretly him off like, hey, we had this conversation about 11 years ago. Talking about my family.
I wish I'd have found room for that in Fallen Towers. You know, I wish I'd have been able to put that in my short film somewhere. I'm like, the Bushes are so devious. They had their cousin, Billy Bush, set Trump up 11 years before when they knew he'd be a primary rival. I mean, that would be some long-term chess matches. Yeah. Because Billy is cousins with George and Jeb, so, like, he's right up in there with them. And I think it's hilarious. Trump hates the Bushes. And he hasn't been able to say it, obviously, but he's probably sitting there thinking, like, I knew it would be a fucking Bush. Like, I knew it would be one of those pieces of scum that would bring me down. The rivalry continues, to say the least.
I think the Bushes got the best of him this time.
So where Jeb is, like, stroking a white cat, like, oh, I've got the last laugh, Donald, you know, like some villainous. Actually, probably George H.W. Bush. Let's get real. 91-year-old George is like, you think you can make me look like a fool? And Jeb's like, we got him, Daddy. A couple of days after that, Nancy O'Dell released a statement. She's like, I'm shocked and horrified by these comments. I thought, well, now on that tape, it says that you let him try to seduce you. Like, he took you to a furniture store, and he bought you thousands of dollars worth of furniture. It sounds to me like you're not that shocked and horrified. Like, she was with a guy, she was married to a guy, but Trump is like this billionaire, is like, hey, Nancy, or whatever. And she's like, all right, I'll let him buy me some furniture. She's like, all right, whatever. I don't really buy the outrage, honestly. Like, to be honest, I'm not quite buying the outrage from people on this. Obviously, I'm for Hillary, and I don't really have a lot of sympathy for Trump, so I don't really care what it is that brings him down. But people acting like this is so horrible, I don't know that I really think it is. I don't know that I'm really as outraged as people want me to be.
Yeah. Like, I can't believe, like, somebody like AL.com is coming out and, you know, supporting, not only, like, disavowing Trump, but supporting and endorsing Hillary. Like, I cannot believe that. Somebody like Robert Bentley is calling for Donald Trump.
I mean, where the fuck does Bentley get off, man? The stones on that guy. Less than a year ago, Bentley, everybody and their brother was making fun of his ass because of that sex tape. And we're going to get into this because Don Siegelman, the last Democratic governor of Alabama, has been rotting in prison. But Robert Bentley has not even been impeached when he had a mistress that was receiving over $400,000 a year. But when you listen to Trump's tape, it's bad. But when you listen to Bentley's tape, I'm going to grab your boobs. We can do that again. I mean, he sounds like a fucking 12-year-old discovering sex for the first time. Like, Bentley sounds like a third grader talking dirty to his teacher. Like, he calls up his teacher and gives her, like, an obscene phone call or something. Like, he doesn't even sound sexually competent, you know? So, I'm surprised that Bentley, of all people, is like, and I think this is so typical. It's so typical because you get somebody who's in hot water and somebody else is just like, oh, let's dogpile it. Like, everybody dogpiles on him. And it doesn't matter if you were the guy who was in hot water last week. You're just glad you're not in hot water anymore. Even Trump is doing it to an extent because this whole thing, well, what do you mean? Grab women without their permission. Well, you know who did that? Bill Clinton. And so everything that Trump's accused of doing is all, well, hey, I talked about doing it to impress Billy Bush, which is maybe pathetic, but Bill Clinton did it for real, which is maybe, you know, who you should be mad at. He's like, okay, so women are totally creeped out by this tape. They think it's disgusting that I, like, sexually harass them and get away with it. My poll numbers, women are dog shit. How can I turn this around? I'll take all the times Hillary's husband cheated on her and I'll rub it in her face. You know, like, I don't think this is really going to turn it around with women. Like, I don't think this is the best strategy he could be using to win those female voters back. They said that he had some kind of secret meeting with his inner circle. They said he was there. His sons were there. Ivanka was not there. They say she may not even be speaking to him anymore, but they said her husband was there. They said Rudy Giuliani was there. Chris Christie was there. Rince Priebus was there. They named about 10 guys. And this was the meeting to try to figure out why his campaign's doing bad with women, and it was 10 men. It was like, how can we turn it around with women? And they didn't have any women in the meeting. I know Giuliani likes to dress in drag, but he's still not a woman. Like, you probably should have had some. I would think you would have had, like, an all-female focus group, but no, I guess that's not.
Yeah, well, you know, that's something about the Republican Party. You know, 2012, I remember seeing something after the election. The Republican Party got together, and they tried to have a meeting to discuss how they can reach black voters. And it was all, like, old white men discussing it.
Yeah.
So it was, they just don't, I don't think they grasp.
And similar to that was when Daryl Issa had that panel on abortion and women's reproductive rights that was picked men. The few women in the Republican Party, like the female congresswomen and stuff, they must look at stuff like that and say, really, guys, like, this is what you want to look at. They probably can't say it out loud, because you know what would happen? If you had a female congresswoman that's in the Republican Party say, hey, guys, maybe I should have went to this. Oh, here we go. Women's lib over here. This one's starting up a bunch of trouble. You know, they'd be like, here, be like, wait a minute, I'm not complaining. They'd be like, oh, you're one of these, I see. Gloria Steinem Jr. At the debate, talking a little bit about the debate, do you think, I don't know, do you think that made any real difference at all?
No. Trump was just absolutely ridiculous in the debate. To be a little fair, I think when he hit her about the comments that she made about the leaked audio or the leaked transcripts on one of her speeches, her argument that she did the same thing as Abraham Lincoln, really? Like, that's the best you could come up with? I am Abraham Lincoln. Like, that was terrible. Even that, like, that just gets completely looked over because of how big of a nutcase Donald Trump was at the debate.
Right.
Hillary's like, oh, I can say some crazy stuff and get away with it.
To be totally fair, and we're for Hillary, and obviously Trump would be a horrible president, but I don't want to just turn my brain off at the door and just be like, everything goes. So to be totally fair, Trump did a little bit better in the second debate than the first debate, and Hillary did a little bit worse. There were a couple of things she was like, I think the first debate, I'd probably give Trump like a D minus, and then Hillary like an A minus. In the second debate, Hillary'd be more like a B, and Trump be more like a T plus. So, hey, Michael, all he needs is about five more debates, and he can, like, you know, be even with her. So, I mean, but at the same time, it doesn't matter that he's doing a slightly better and she's doing slightly worse, because there's only one debate left. There's only three total. At the rate that he's going, you'd have to have 10. I mean, maybe he thinks this is the primary schedule where they had a debate every fucking week. You would need to have a lot more than three debates for him to pull even with her. And he doesn't need to pull even with her at this point. He has to, like, knock her down. Like, he has to do way better than her to get anywhere. What he did right was that he had a couple of zingers. What he did wrong was, like, everything else. He brags about not paying his taxes. When Hillary brings up, you know, his sexual assault, he just talks about Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton is not running for president. I don't know if he really understands that. Like, Hillary's the one on the ticket.
Yeah,
like, Bill Clinton.
I don't think
that helps him with female voters. Because when he's constantly talking about, like, Bill Clinton, women hear that and they're like, is he not even taking her seriously by going to her husband over and over and over again? Like, is he not even grasping that, like, she's out of her husband's shadow now? You need to deal with her. She's the one running.
I don't think his supporters understand that either, because that's every single Trump supporter that I know. And being in Alabama, there's plenty that are like, you know, I don't care what Trump does.
Yeah.
I'm never going to vote for a woman. Yeah. But every single one of them is like, well, it's just words. It's just words. Bill Clinton did this. I'm not going to vote for a Clinton because Bill Clinton, who cares what Bill Clinton did? He's not running for president.
Right.
If you want to talk about Bill Clinton, guess what that does? That makes Hillary Clinton look like the victim.
Right, exactly. I don't understand. It's like, well, you know, but Hillary's husband cheated on her, and I'm like, and how does this really hurt Hillary? How does this make her look bad? And they did this in the primary. Republicans would bring that up in the primary, and I kept thinking, how does this hurt her? Huma Abedin, her assistant, when Anthony Weiner shows his dick to the world, who's like, well, that's Huma. Like, nobody blames her for like, nobody, like, it makes you feel sorry for her. Nobody looks at that and is just like, Huma's the real disgusting one. He's sneaking around behind her back. Well, where is her back that he's doing this? You know, I mean, like, nobody really looks at it that way. But they're still going down that path, and it's like a month before the race, and a lot of states have already started voting. Early voting started in California a couple of days ago. Some of the swing states could be decided before November the 8th.
Yeah.
The fact that they're still going down a path, and that's something else people brought up in their second debate. People kept saying, well, Trump, he was trying to win back Republicans. I thought, win back Republicans? This is a fucking general election, and that's what's so hilarious. He's so damaged. His purpose in the second debate was to convince Republicans that he should be at the top of the ticket, not Mike Pence. It was all about trying to get people to stop saying, step aside, let Mike take over. If that's what you're worried about, a month before the race is winning back Republican support.
Yeah.
It's over. What was funny was right before the debate, I got a text message from Jess from the Hillary campaign, who hits me up for money 4 or 5 times a day. But right before the debate, she was like, Hillary needs you now more than ever. I'm like, there's not one poll where she's not ahead. Right after the debate, usually she's like, we need $1, $1, we need $2, chip in $3. And then for, you know, Tim Kaine, it's always some random amount. Hey, Tim Kaine speaking, chip in 75 cents or something, and it'll always be some $100 number. Right after the debate, she's like, can you contribute $20? I'm like, $20? Like, Hillary has raised more money than him every month for duration of the general election. She's outraised him in money. She is ahead in every swing state. She's ahead in every major poll. I mean, I hate to say it, but if she cannot beat him, she kind of deserves to lose.
Yeah.
He's pitiful. I mean, people saying, well, you know, Billy Bush and maybe the Bushes conspired to bring Trump down. I don't know, but I'm starting to seriously believe that Clinton put Trump up to run him in the first place, because this is her dream candidate. You know, when he won the Republican nomination, she was like, yes. You know, because I honestly don't know if she could have beat John Kasich, but Donald Trump, this is the weakest person she could have faced. And so she must be at least somewhat relieved that this is her opponent.
Yeah. Kind of what we talked about throughout the primaries, we talked about how, I can't remember which podcast it was, but I think one of them we were talking about, of the Republican, Trump would be the one that she should want to face. So, you know, she's excited about it. How could you not be?
I mean, it's by far the easiest person she could face. I don't think Democrats realize what a gift he is. Democrats, every time you get on Twitter and Facebook, they are just hammering this guy. I mean, scum, the worst. I can't believe he's even president. I mean, even a nominee. We should be celebrating that he is. Only about a month ago, Democrats were seriously like, oh, are we going to take back the Senate? It was seriously in question that we would finally take back the Senate. And now, I mean, if we do, it'll be because of him. He's that unpopular in the swing state.
I was looking into that. They were doing CNN was doing a poll asking, do you favor Republicans or Democrats as your representatives in Congress? And for the longest, it was always conservative. After Trump and his tape come out, and after the debate, they did one recently, and they said that something like 6 out of every 10 people they asked, they now want a Democrat representing them in Congress. So that is bringing the entire party down. And that's why you're seeing all of these congressmen run from him. The Democrats are going to take back the Senate. I can't see them not. If they don't, it'll at least be tied. But they're going to make huge gains in the House. Who would have thought that 6 months ago?
This whole year, I've been really confused as to why they haven't launched like an all-out campaign to take back the House. They've kind of played around, and they've kind of been like, we're doing a rebuilding strategy. This year is all about trying to rebuild so we can take it back at some future destination. And I'm like, take it back now. Because this is the easiest you're going to get. I mean, Trump is the nominee, and a big presidential election that brings everybody out. What do you think is going to be easier years from now when most Democrats don't even vote? We talked about episode 40. I mean, like, this is the time to try to do it. And I would launch full-out assault trying to take back the House. And even if you fall like 5 or 6 seats short, Hillary should just take exactly what I'd do is I would take like California Republicans or New York Republicans. I would take the House seats where there's a Democratic governor, and I would offer them like ambassadorships or something. Hey, Carol Issa, you want to be ambassador to France? Get them out of the House, and then the Democratic governor can appoint a Democrat to fill those seats. You can take it back that way. You may not find people like Carol Issa who are willing to do that. You can probably find 10 Republicans who are just like, yeah, I mean, I'm a House Representative member. I mean, it's a dead-end job. I mean, you could probably find a dozen that are willing to go. You can't do that with 30-something people, because right now they're at a 30-seat loss. They got to get it down to 10 or a dozen, and then you could do that.
And then Hillary could play the bipartisanship card.
Kind of work with these Republicans, and they just won't let me. You know? Paul Ryan, he's not the genius people have made him out to be. People have given him too much credit for a long time. I look at what Mitch McConnell has done and how he's handled it, and how Paul Ryan has handled it, and Paul Ryan's incompetent. So for the last year, McConnell's like, I support Trump in one statement. But other than that, like they keep asking him about it, if he's going to take away his support, and he just pleads the fifth. Like he keeps his own counsel. He works yeah. quietly behind the scenes to try to take as many Senate seats as possible. Paul Ryan, my heart's with Trump, but my head's not with Trump. Now my head's went over, but my heart's not with him. My soul doesn't know if I'm with him or not. He's tried to have it both ways. He's tried yeah. to have his cake and eat it too. I mean, he's tried to be just enough for Trump that he can say he's with him, but not enough that people who don't like Trump don't like him. And this is what happens when you have a Speaker of the House who's got his own presidential ambition. This is right. why Paul Ryan was always going to be a lousy Speaker of the House. Yeah. He was Mitt Romney's running mate 4 years ago, and everybody's been saying, oh, maybe he'll jump in at the convention. Maybe he'll jump in the honeymoon. I could see Trump winning, and then on Inauguration Day, maybe Paul Ryan will take the mic from him, Kanye style. Republicans have been wanting him so desperately to get in the mix. Yeah. Speaker of the House, but he's got presidential ambitions. He can't be a good Speaker of the House. Like they're two incompatible jobs, and you really yeah. should never have been Speaker of the House. But I think they were just didn't have anybody else.
Yeah.
And that's why you keep seeing these fuck-ups where he's like, he's supposed to be a Speaker for the Republican Party, but he keeps coming off like a Speaker for himself.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to make my political future toxic when I run for president again, so I've got to try to distance myself from him. At the same time, all these Republicans don't get fed up with me and then not vote for the candidates. It's a tricky balancing act, and I think he's failed, and I think McConnell's yeah. done a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Tell him a lot.
Yeah. I don't want to give him any credit. Like, it pains me to say this, but John Boehner, like when you look right. at the job John Boehner done as the Speaker of the House, at least he spoke for the House Republican. And at least he
tried to.
Until the Tea Party.
I can see John Boehner coming in like, all right, I'm trying to, and the Tea Party member throws a bottle at him or something, like knocks him out.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
yeah.
Tea Party member, like, stabs him.
I mean, until the Tea Party wait, you know what I'm saying? Like, at least he, you know.
Right.
Right. At least he tried to rally the party together, whereas Paul Ryan, it's all about himself.
Exactly. Paul Ryan, I mean, he just, I don't know if he's driving the Republican Party, the Republican Party's driving him. I mean, it all just seems like it's just a weird position. And Rince Priebus, I feel like he's in a corner sucking his thumb somewhere. Like, he's just got like a blanket, and he's like, oh, I need my teddy. Or, like, I don't think he knows what he's doing. He and Paul Ryan both, I mean, one day I'm with Trump. The next day Trump says something. I'm not sure if I can fully support Trump with my heart, my balls, my head, my eyes. Rince Priebus is like, I'm not sure if I can support these comments. I'm like, do you think anybody gives a fuck? Like, do you think anybody's sitting at, like, you think some voter in Kansas is like, I wonder what Rince Priebus thinks about these comments. Like, nobody cares. It's not about you. People used to know the art of being kind of like the behind-the-scenes power broker, have a big fat cigar and sit in the back room and make these deals. Nobody cares what Rince Priebus, oh, I'm not sure if I can get behind Trump's latest leaked audio tape. Like, who gives a fuck? Seems like they're doing such a lousy job of rallying support for this candidate who they're stuck with. I'm completely behind Donald Trump, but if he should decide to quit, Mike Pence would be a way better choice.
If you want to talk about Priebus, I want to say 80% of Americans, they probably don't have a clue who he is or what he does. They probably can't even pronounce it. They don't care about what he thinks.
That's what I think about Paul Ryan, too, where it's like Trump is running for president. Every time you turn on CNN, I mean, CNN's Trump, 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 Trump. Every 5 minutes about Trump. And then Paul Ryan comes out, I ate a slice of apple pie this morning and it gave me acid reflux, and that made me think about Trump's latest comments. And is that acid reflux a sign from God that I should support? Paul Ryan's in like some fucking Robert Bresson film or something. Like, he's spiritually torn up. I mean, he's like priest having an identity crisis or something. He looks so anguished about what to do. So I have to say, I mean, the Democratic Party, I mean, we look like a well-oiled machine compared to this bunch of fucking screw-ups, you know? Like, I mean, this clown show, it makes the Democrats look so confident. I mean, like, it's so put together.
Well, I mean, even Trump, like, I don't know if you heard his comments, but he was like, he was bragging about how the Democrats were rallying together and stuff together, and he was like, I always knew it was the Democrats that supported their own high-grade bashing the Republican Party.
You know, except for when they stole the race from Bernie. But beyond that, Democrats do a much better job of loyalty and sticking together.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I've never thought that in my life. I've always thought Republicans did a way better job. Like, it's always been exactly the opposite, actually.
Yeah.
Usually, Republicans like, oh, John McCain's our guy, and they all get behind him. Bush is our guy, and they all get behind him. Like, they pick a guy, their primaries typically run a month shorter than the Democratic primary when they're both open seats, because they pick a guy and they all get behind him. I've always thought Republicans were more united. And Democrats were always like, oh, I'm the smartest guy in the room. No, I'm the smartest guy in the room. And we're always trying to, like, outdo each other in some way. When you see Republicans on talk shows, they all said the same fucking thing. You could have one guy on Real Time and one guy on MSNBC and one guy on Fox News, and they're all making the same talking points. And then Democrats, like, well, I think too many black men are going to jail. And then actually too many urban black men are going to jail. Actually too many young black men who have gun records are going, you know, and they throwing in actually trying to outdo each other, be more and more specific. So I think it's funny that now it's like even Trump is just like, oh, Democrats are so loyal and they're all together and I can't get any help from Republicans. A couple of days ago he said, I can finally run this campaign with the shackles off.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what that means. I mean, I feel like he's going to go like into a full-on meltdown or something. What is the final debate? He's like, yeah, yeah, Hillary's here. Enough about Hillary. Let me tell you about John McCain. Like, the final debate is just him going after all the other Republicans in the Republican Party and just, like, destroying the Republican Party live for 90 minutes.
Hillary's sitting there, like, with a confused look on her face. She's like, do I chime in? Like, or do I just, like...
Well, it was funny because in both of the debates, the strongest she is when she says nothing. Like, in the second debate, there was about a five-minute period where Trump was talking about taxes and sex tapes and tying all this stuff together, and Hillary did not say one word for four straight minutes, and it was her strongest. She's having a breakdown out there. I think the third debate, I mean, if he just goes off on some rant, she's just going to let him talk. And that's her strategy, is to, like, just let him speak. Their hope was that he wouldn't just sink himself. He would sink the congressional Republicans, and it's definitely coming true.
Well, let me throw this scenario out there. Do you think that Trump's plan is, he knows he has his core base. He knows he has his supporters. He knows he's not getting the Republican voters. So what if he's all of a sudden turning on the Republicans and saying, Hillary isn't the most popular Democratic candidate, so why don't I just turn and, like, start trying to attract all the Democrat voters? And he's trying to steal all the Democratic voters from Hillary.
Who knows? It's hard to fathom what his strategy, it's hard to fathom that he has a strategy.
That's true.
I mean, it seems pretty random. But I like when he said he was going to take the shackles off. And, I mean, to me, him bringing out Bill Clinton's accusers right before the debate and then bringing them to the debate, he's a desperate man. Like, when I was watching him during that debate, I was like, it's hard to watch a guy drown. Quick, throw him a barbell. Have him drown faster. But, I mean, he's drowning. And I think Trump, a desperate Trump is a dangerous Trump, and God only knows what he's going to do. During the third debate, he'll be like, hold on. He'll have, like, some fake earpiece in his ear and be like, I just got word that we're going to arrest Hillary Clinton, and they'll have this type of security come in and, like, arrest her on stage or something.
What if he, like, pulls out a pair of handcuffs and just, like, walks over and lays them on her podium? They're coming for you.
He handcuffs her to the podium, and he goes, I don't want her to escape. She might pull a trick. She might pull a Houdini and get out of here before they can get her or something. So he'd be like, during the last debate, we all know I killed Osama bin Laden, and now it's time for me to arrest Hillary Clinton. And he, like, arrest her. He'll pull out, like a dildo or something. He'll be like, I had a mold of Bill Clinton's penis made, and I'm going to ask the women in the audience if it fits to anyone who's been sexually assaulted or something. And he'll have, this is a guy during one of the Republican primary debates who bragged about his dick size. So I don't think he's a month until the presidential race. He wants to be president. Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes watching him, I'm like, does he even want to be president because of the shit he's doing, like all the self-sabotage? Yeah. I have to wonder if he's not like, oh, my God, if I become president, I have to actually do this crazy shit I was talking about. I can't do any of this, and they're going to figure me out. Sometimes it's better for people to think, oh, what could have been? Like right now, best people in America, the luckiest people in America are Bernie Sanders fans because they can sit back and think, oh, my God, if only he'd been president, we could all ride free segways to our college tuition and have government-provided blowjobs and candy and steaks. So, I mean, all the Bernie Sanders fans have a great job because they can think, what could have been if only they'd had Bernie? Trump is probably like, oh, shit, if I get elected, I'm going to be the biggest disappointment that's ever been for like half the country. And I think he would rather his fans live in a place that's like, oh, if only Trump had won 50 to 100 million people that are diehard Trump fans, they're going to go to his casinos. They're going to go to his hotels. If he starts a media company, they're going to go to his media company and listen to the Trump news and all this stuff. Those people are going to be customers of Trump Empire or whatever. And I think he'd much rather have that segment thinking if only Trump had won, then like he actually wins. And then 4 years later, oh my God, he didn't do anything that he said he was going to do.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm wrong and he actually does want to win and become president, he's a month away from becoming president. And if he really wants it, he has no morals and no scruples, and he'll go total scorched earth. I mean, I know this sounds like something a nut would say. I wouldn't be completely surprised if Trump tried to fake a terrorist attack just so he could look like he was, like somehow he like faked some Syrian refugee, slept with Hillary Clinton and got explosives or something and be like, oh my God, she was carrying on. She was Hillary in like a beret and she's got a machine gun strapped in her. And her and the communists, they were conspiring with an ISIS refugee, blow up the Chicago Bridge or something. I mean, like all the terrorist attacks were going to happen in swing states. Oh my God, they were going to blow up a pretzel factory in Ohio if they hadn't. Yeah. Oh my Lord. You know, and then Ohio comes out big for him or something. But it's hard to know what a winning strategy for him at this point looks like. But I'm sure Trump is going to be like, shit, throw stuff at the wall. If you want something and you're so far behind on the polls, I mean, you're desperate. And you're going to do anything you can to try to win. How'd you like those people that were asking the questions? I love those town hall style debates. Because, see, they always go, oh, we have to find independents or we have to find people that are undecided. And every time you get undecided, it's a month before a presidential election in a country where presidential races go on for 2 years. It's the dumbest fucking people you probably ever run into. And this debate was no exception. Hillary, who does your hair? Trump, what kind of ties do you like? I mean, somebody might as well have come out there and been like, hey, what's your favorite ice cream flavor? I feel like we would have learned as much from them.
And that last question.
Oh, what a beauty. What a beauty.
Yeah.
And I loved it, too, because that guy that asked the last question, first of all, it took him like a full minute to ask one. I love that, too, how slow he talked. But that guy was on CNN the day after the debate, and she goes, so you asked that famous question, which everybody likes or whatever. What did you think about their answer? And it took him an hour to answer, like, a couple of questions. She goes, who are you voting for? Like, after that debate, and you heard that question, you heard their answers, like, who are you voting for? He goes, I'm still undecided. And I swear, like, he's got, like, a lazy eye. Like, his eye was fluttering, and his other eye was going up or whatever. I mean, I feel like what if he just saw, like, a giant slug eating the back of his brain or something like that, and he's just, like, slobbering on himself and, like, looking like a zombie. Even the reporter was like, you're still undecided. What would have to happen to push you off the fence? He goes, I'll know it when I hear it. I don't think you will know it when you hear it. I think that's one of those guys that goes into the booth and is just like, oh, Clinton's first alphabetically. We'll go with, they just pick somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, at this point, if you're undecided, who fucking needs you? As misguided as the Trump people are, I would rather have Trump people who are completely misguided and voting for the wrong reasons, who at least know some of the issues, than these so-called independents, undecideds, or moderates who don't fucking know anything. Like, I think we have this misconception, oh, well, the undecideds and the moderates and the independents, those are the ones who they're so wise and they pick and choose what they need from each party. They don't know anything. Like, people who actually poll this stuff, they find that liberals know the most, conservatives know the second most, and the independents and moderates and undecideds, they know almost nothing. They're just actively not paying attention to any of this shit, and that's how they could be undecided after so long. Half the questions were like that. The first question, if I had to give this presidential campaign a rating, it would be TVMA. And then she looked like everybody was going to start laughing at her joke, and then nobody did. She goes, this is inappropriate for people under 17. And I just like, grow up. Half those questions were like that. It was just like, oh, who's your favorite Care Bear?
Yeah.
What would you do to make sure that my favorite rock band doesn't break up? How can we all live in a world of peace and harmony? To be totally fair to Trump and conservatives, the least convincing aspect of Hillary's campaign this time is this peace, love, unity bullshit. It's the least convincing. Cause, I mean, I know Hillary. She's a pragmatic progressive. It's all about what works, what doesn't work. She has to dumb herself down into this love Trump's hate. We all stand united or we don't. I mean, it's this bullshit. Like, it's this, like, 60s, let's all stand and hold hands and sing Kumbaya. She's not really like that. Like, she's Angela Merkel. She's somebody who comes in and is like, okay, the subway line's down. Here's what we're going to do to fix it. But because so much of the country is zoned out and on Xanax, happy pills, you can't even do that anymore. Like, you now have to be touchy-feely. I want to give you a hug. That's how it has to be. Like, that's how you're president has to look like, man or woman. So it doesn't really work. But during the debate, Hillary kept being like, well, one thing I don't like is Trump's negative tone and all the disunity, and he's always putting people down. And here's why I'm going to put Trump down, because he's a piece of shit. And so it doesn't really work, because a lot of her thing is like, I want to run a positive campaign. But she's not really running a positive campaign. And I'm not saying I blame her.
Yeah.
It totally makes sense to go after Trump and his character and his personality. I mean, she really hasn't thought that much about issues lately, because he is giving her such a gift. And they're like, when we go after issues an ideology, that shit is quicksand because people don't agree, and you can't, like, you do a morality-based campaign and you get lost. When I do it, it's simply, do you want the President of the United States to be in a Twitter war with Miss America? Like, when you do personality and his character and who he is, she wins in a landslide. But at the same time, she's not a transcendent figure. She's not an Obama, hope, love, change, transcendent figure. And it's okay.
Yeah.
I kind of prefer the way she is, to be honest. Are you sensing a little bit of mixed messaging of, like, love Trump's hate?
Yeah.
At the same time, let me tell you why Donald Trump is a racist.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Even though Trump had a really bad last couple of weeks, people still talk about putting her in jail. One thing that was amazing was that Trump so openly bragged about putting Hillary in jail. It's a big laugh line. Like, it was crazy to me what the audience laughed at during that debate. A political prisoner, hilarious. This really brings us to our theme, corruption. When we talk about corruption in the United States, I find, and one thing I always say is, like, a lot of times the corruption we have here is really how we investigate and prosecute corruption. What we consider corruption is corruption in a lot of ways.
Right.
Who gets prosecuted? Who gets investigated? Who gets called before a grand jury? Who goes to jail? Don Siegelman is political. And so really what they're accused of a lot of times in a corruption case, what Don Siegelman did was nothing. We'll get into that specifically. Blagojevich in Illinois did was really not that big a deal. What Hillary has done, deleting emails, misspeaking about Benghazi or whatever, this is nothing. But the fact that they go into long congressional investigations and they talk about putting her in jail and all this stuff, that is the real corruption, is how they choose to look at it and interpret it and investigate it.
Trump coming out openly saying, I'm going to assign a prosecutor to investigate you. Well, first of all, he doesn't have that authority. Something that Richard Nixon tried to do. They changed the powers of the president. Donald Trump doesn't understand how the Constitution works. He doesn't understand how our government works. He doesn't understand the powers of the president. And he's running to be the president.
I love it, too, during the debate when his whole defense for not paying taxes, it's Hillary's fault because she didn't force me to pay taxes.
Yeah.
And then when he was blah-blahing about higher tax rates when you were a senator, why didn't you do something about it? And she's like, well, I had a Republican president. He's like, that shows Hillary's an effective senator. She left. I mean, you're talking about, like, checks and balances system. And I'm just like, does he really not know about checks and balances? First of all, does he not know that one senator can't single-handedly do anything? Like, does he not? There's 100 senators. You have to have two-thirds do anything.
Yeah.
Filibuster-proof majorities, two-thirds. Hillary kind of looked at him like, am I going to have to give this motherfucker a civics lesson during the debate, like in the middle of the debate? Am I going to have to do this?
Well, she did with one line. She was like, presidents have a thing called a veto.
You know, Trump's like, I know that, damn it. And then, like, right after the debate, he's like, what the fuck is a veto? Tell me about it. During both debates, he had the sniffles. And then during both debates after it, he said, I have no sniffles. I wasn't sniffling. And, like, the whole country. I'm like, this is Kim Jong-un territory. The first debate, he didn't want to admit he was sniffling because he's made this whole thing about he's healthy and Hillary's not healthy.
Yeah.
Like, he's healthy as a horse. And I'm not able to get sick or something. This is what they said about Kim Jong-un, that the man's not capable of being sick, that he can't have diarrhea, that he's infallible in that way. So when we talk about corruption, Trump is really fanning the flames of a certain kind of corruption, which is this idea that he's the truth seeker, he's the noble warrior, Obama's getting away with something by being president. Obama, he shouldn't be able to be president, which is a lie. He's investigated it as a lie, but he still keeps spreading it. Then when he gets caught in a lie, it's really Hillary's lie. She started the birtherism movement, which is another lie. They look at Obama as corrupt just by being president. They don't think Hillary be walking around as a free woman and think she should be in an orange jumpsuit. When we hear, like, Hillary goes to jail, we laugh and, like, make jokes about it because it seems so crazy. Right now, all over the internet, millions of people are like, Hillary, here's why she should be in jail. What about the 20,000 emails that were deleted? What about the Benghazi video? Benghazi, Benghazi, email, email, Benghazi, email. So fucking obsessed with it that it's like they can't get beyond it. And this is the new form of corruption. Even when something's debunked, even when something's investigated, Benghazi's investigated for 4 years, keep investigating, keep throwing money away on this, keep looking for something till you find it.
Yeah.
And it reminds me a little bit of Siegelman.
Yeah.
One thing, when we started this podcast, we both wanted to talk about Siegelman in some episode. I'm a little sad that, like, so much happened in the last week that we had so much to get to before we got to this. The last Democratic governor, so we have Robert Bentley now, unfortunately. Before him, we had Bob Riley, unfortunately. But before Bob Riley, we had Don Siegelman as governor.
Yeah.
It's been a while ago, about 15 years ago, probably. Ted Siegelman was a great governor. He was only governor 4 years. But he made a big impact. Most of the car plants, like Toyota and such, they're there because of Sigelman. Sigelman went out of his way to recruit cars and car manufacturing. He went out of his way to get jobs to come to the state. He gave teachers a big raise. He made teachers a priority. He passed laws, capped the classroom size, so that a lot of the classroom sizes went down. I mean, he was a great governor for teachers. You know, now a lot of them don't even know who he is. And he tried to pass the education lottery. People may not really understand this or know much about what this is about, because every state in America is about sold lottery tickets. But Alabama is one of only five or six states that doesn't sell lottery tickets. The other ones being Nevada and Mississippi, who both have a lot of casinos, so they kind of have a reason not to. Alaska, where the oil is subsidized. They pay people to live in Alaska, literally. Dakota, where they have similar things with the oil industry. Really, the last major state that doesn't have a lottery and doesn't have a reason not to is Alabama. Now, that sounds crazy. When you tell people, well, we don't sell Mega Millions, we don't sell Powerball, we don't have a lottery, they're like, wait a minute. I mean, other states are arguing about euthanasia and, like, exactly, well, marijuana is legal now. Should we allow cocaine or whatever? And then we're up like, oh, I don't think we should sell lottery tickets.
Yeah.
Being settled for years and years. Back when we were in middle school, really, like, it's been a while ago, half our lifetimes ago, Sigelman was trying to pass the educational lottery, and it didn't pass. What happened was the case is a little murky about exactly why he's in jail. He tried to look it up and make sense of it, but it's a little confusing about how he's even in jail, really.
Basically, what happened was he was trying to get the education lottery passed. He was raising money to help get support for the lottery. Richard Scrooge, he donated $250,000 to help try to get this lottery passed, the lottery campaign. After he made the donation, Sigelman appointed him to a healthcare review board for the state of Alabama. And the lottery ended up failing, and people started looking at it, and they said, oh, Sigelman, basically Scrooge, made the donation hoping that he would get something in return. And Sigelman appointed him to the board because he made that donation. They're basically saying that it was a type of robbery, that Scrooge bribed his way onto the board by making a donation, which, if you follow politics, is pretty much exactly what happens all the time. So he gets charged. This is the mind-blowing part. He gets charged with 29 different counts. 29. They charge him with 29 different things. 22 of them he gets acquitted for. 7 of them he gets convicted for. And then 2 of those get overturned. So out of 29 charges, he's really serving 5 of them. And you can tell they were just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what would stick. Charged him with everything they possibly could just to get him locked up. They found a few that they were able to get to stick.
His case is so infuriating because it was clear that they were looking for something to put him away with.
Yeah.
Like, when I call Don Sigelman an American political prisoner, that sounds crazy. But even before this charge, Karl Rove was trying to bring down Sigelman because they were really afraid of a Democratic governor of Alabama. I mean, they thought, you know, if you can be a Democratic governor of Alabama, you're a pretty good presidential figure, either president or vice president. As we talked about in 40, the last 3 Democrats before Obama were Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, LBJ, so they were all Democrats from the South. Sigelman was charismatic. He could be a national figure. He had a good job record in Alabama. He was starting to turn things around. A Democrat that could possibly carry Alabama as a state is a nightmare scenario for Republicans in electorals.
Yeah.
Even before the Richard Scrooge business, the lottery business, Karl Rove put a woman in his office to try to sleep with him to bring him down that way. This woman was from Fort Payne, Alabama. My dad actually knows this lady. Went to school together, something like that, but this was national. I mean, I'm not making a story up. This story was in 60 Minutes. It was in the New York Times. They wanted this woman to sleep with Sigelman, and then he didn't go for it, and then she felt bad about it, and she went and told everybody that they were trying to do this. So when Sigelman runs for re-election against Bob Riley, he loses barely. He only loses by Baldwin County. And there was all these, like, weird things with the ballots, and there was a lot of weird discrepancies or whatever, but after he loses, almost immediately, they start the ball rolling against criminal charges because he was probably going to run again. His reelection after that point was hampered by the fact that he had a fucking ankle bracelet. I mean, like, he was on all these criminal charges and stuff, so that kind of hampered his reelection from that point. But then after he was indicted on all those counts she talked about, they put him in, like, handcuffs. They tied his hands behind his back. They put him in restraints. I mean, it was like he was Hannibal Lecter some shit. The whole thing was just done to embarrass him. They put him in a van. They whisked him away. His sentence has been in a Louisiana prison, even though his whole family lives in Alabama. He was the governor of Alabama. They put him in Louisiana, saying, oh, we don't want him to get special privileges. Really, they wanted to make it harder to coordinate his legal defense because his lawyers would have to keep coming to Louisiana, and his family would have to keep driving several hours to be there. Yeah. So they wanted to make it harder to coordinate an appeal. So he's been in jail for a while. I mean, he's been in jail for years. I think he's scheduled to be released next year anyway.
Yeah.
But Obama should pardon him. And in fact, if Obama leaves office and has not pardoned him by the time he leaves office, I'm going to be a little disappointed in Obama, because this is a slam dunk pardon if there ever was one. I have no doubt in my mind Bill Clinton would pardon him. He definitely pardoned Seligman.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that Obama has not done it already, because this is a federal prison. So when you go to whitehouse.org, I'm not ashamed to admit that when Bill Maher on Real Time was asking people to sign that petition on whitehouse.org, get Obama to come on Real Time, you know, real important business.
Yeah.
Get Obama to come on, you know, Bill Maher's talk show or whatever. That's the first petition I've ever went there and did anything with. But that was so important. But when I went there, about half the petitions that I saw were for that show Making of a Murderer, that guy who's in prison in Wisconsin. Not really. Realizing that that's a state prison, and Obama and the presidency have nothing to do with state prisons. The governor has to give clemency in a state prison. But Sigelman's not that way. He's in a federal prison. He's a federal crime. He's in a prison in Louisiana, federal prison. That's absolutely Obama's jurisdiction. He absolutely could pardon him if he wants to. And I'm just not sure why he won't do it. I know he maybe he's afraid of looking too partisan or whatever, but what difference does it fucking make? I mean, like, you know, you're going to leave your presidency. Republicans hate you no matter what you do. There's really no downside to doing it.
Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, he's already hated by Republicans.
So, yeah.
I mean, it might be like one final big, like, F you to the Republican Party. Like, I'm going to free this guy you put in prison. Yeah.
And they did put him in prison. I wish we had more time specifically to go into corruption. But when you say America has political prisoners, that sounds crazy. But a guy like Sigelman would not be in jail if he were not a Democrat in Alabama. Like, he would have never went to prison for this same crime anywhere else. If he'd have been a Republican, he wouldn't be in jail. Mike Hubbard, the former Speaker of the State House, was indicted on 23 counts of corruption, and he is going to get off with paying a fine and some community service and shit. I mean, he's not going to really see jail time, serious jail time. And they said something like he's embezzled. I don't want to put an exact figure. I know it was a million. I know it was like upwards of $10 million, and the fine is like $200,000. And you're talking about a guy who personally benefited. Sigelman's, even the people who put him in jail are not saying he personally got money. They're saying that he got $500,000 in an account for the lottery. They're not saying he spent a dime of that money. You know, Sigelman's sitting there thinking like, wait a minute, I get $500,000 for the lottery campaign. Mike Hubbard gets $10 million for himself. He gives back $200,000 and I'm in jail for 10 years. What the fuck is he must look at the newspapers and be like, what the fuck is this? What is happening?
Yeah.
But in that right there, you see Robert Bentley, who had an affair with a woman he was paying $400,000 of state money to, and he has not even been asked to resign. Like, he's not even out. He's not even impeached. He's still governor. He's not going to be impeached. He's going to finish his term, and nothing will happen to him. Nothing. Mike Hubbard keeps his freedom. I mean, Mike Hubbard was indicted years ago, and he was still Speaker of the House. He didn't even step down until recently. It's been on for like 2 years before he even stepped down. Mike Hubbard keeps his freedom. Most of the money he stole until very recently, his power. Robert Bentley keeps his power, has not even given that up. Never stood the inside of a jail cell. I can just about guarantee you that Bentley will never even stand trial. And Don Sigelman is in prison in Louisiana, where his family can't even really see him on a regular basis. Free Don Sigelman. It seems so egregious, and I think this is another example of how you can do something like this in Alabama, because people are not paying attention. I don't know that you could do this in New York or California.
Yeah.
In a state like Alabama, I think you get away with more. It just seems like people are zoned out. And even most of the stuff you see about Sigelman, I mean, you're talking about 60 Minutes, the New York Times, Time Magazine. You don't really see it in, like, the Birmingham newspapers, the Huntsville newspapers, the Mobile newspapers, the South Alabama media. You know, it pretty much all has to come from out of state. And the state of Alabama is like, who's Don Sigelman?
Yeah.
This guy was governor not even 24 years ago, and everybody's like, who's Don Siegelman? They don't even know him. It's kind of sad that, like, only the national media has really brought any attention to this, and they haven't brought full attention to it only because, again, it's Alabama, and it's like, who really cares? And it just shows you can get away with murder in a state like that. Now, I've been racking my brain. I'm like, I think Siegelman, that might be the highest profile corruption case in the last 20 years, because I can't think of that many governors that have actually went to jail. I mean, very few governors have actually went to jail, and I don't think any have been in jail as long as he has.
I can't think of any either, just right off the top of my head.
I mean, there's every governor of Illinois seems like that's their going away presence. Like, you get a gold watch and 6 months in jail.
Yeah.
They defer it. They do house arrest. They do community service. If they ever go to jail, it's like 3 months. I mean, Siegelman has done real jail time. Don't know exactly. I want to say 7 or 8 years he's been in prison. It's very rare for a governor to be in jail that long. And especially when you look at what he's in prison for, it's unheard of. Even Republicans are saying, hey, pardon Don Siegelman. He shouldn't be in jail.
Right.
If I had $10,000, I'd probably go out and make a really good documentary about it. Maybe people would see it. Maybe they would care, but probably not. You probably have a couple of hundred people being like, damn, this is shameful. And they're about to be like, oh, Alabama? I don't think so. I'm out on that one.
Exactly.
I don't even know what you could do. What do you think of, if I ask you to like define corruption, what you think of as truly corrupt, like what should a politician actually go to jail for?
It's so hard to say now. Just looking at Siegelman's case, when you had looking at Citizens United ruling, taking money from businesses and from people, it's so common, and Citizens United kind of blew that up. Unlimited campaign contributions from businesses. I don't know how you could really define corruption in today's political world. Short of having a smoking gun like CNN giving Barack Obama $10 million to have a presidential proclamation that CNN is the best news station or something.
Right.
If you don't have a smoking gun that money was directly given to a political person, it's almost impossible to prove corruption.
Thing that was, you know, we name-checked Jeb Bush over in the podcast.
Yeah.
He was against Citizens United, and everybody was like, yeah, Jeb Bush is against Citizens United, but it wasn't for a positive reason. He didn't like that you had to give money to a super PAC that couldn't coordinate with your campaign. He thought you should give that much money, unlimited amount, straight to a campaign. When he was against the Citizens United ruling, all he was against was the middleman of the super PACs. He thought the campaign should be able to raise unlimited amounts. Basically, we live in a system of open bribery. Hey, the Koch brothers, what's all this? People against ISIS and Americans for apple pie, like these super PACs. Like, why not throw them out the window and just give me $1 billion straight? Okay, that's open bribery.
Yeah.
It is hard to define what is corruption in American politics because it's very strange. It's like these arcane rules. It's like, oh, you can give my super PAC $10 million, but you can't buy me a steak dinner. You know,
exactly.
Like, it can't be directly to me. But yet, when you look at it and be like, okay, well, you don't like direct campaign contributions, Siegelman didn't receive a dime for himself. He received $500,000 to go to this lottery committee. It looks like a pre-super PAC super PAC. Like in the age before super PACs, this was a lottery. It would now be called a super PAC, and $500,000 went to that, and then somebody who gave that eventually got a job on the Alabama Health Care Board. I don't even know what you would call that now except Tuesday. Oh, as a Republican, I'm going to take $10 million, and then that guy's going to get... That's okay. And then it's like, oh, as a Democrat, Siegelman's going to, hell no, lock him up, put him in jail, put the handcuffs on him. I don't know what corruption is, really. Like, people say, well, Trump, I heard now people are like, oh, Trump, he's going to go to jail, he's going to do, I'm not even for that. I don't like Donald Trump. I don't care after this race is over with. I don't care to ever talk about him. In fact, I think the last few episodes, we'll probably barely talk about him. Well, once the campaign's over with, like, I don't think about it. I'm supposed to resent him for forcing me to talk about him so much because some of the best episodes in the entire Elon conversation have had almost nothing to do with the presidential race because it's so mean to be rid of him and like out from under his shadow. He should go to jail. And I'm not for that. Like, I think he's probably a crook. I think he's probably done some bad business deals, but I don't like the slippery slope of we're going to jail people we don't like politically.
Yeah.
Like, we don't like Trump. They're not putting him in jail because of this tax bullshit. They're putting him in jail because they don't like him. It's because they don't like him as a person and politically. And the same thing with Hillary. When Trump is so talking so flagrantly about putting her in jail, it's such a dangerous... I know Republicans think they want that. They think they want that, but you don't. because that is such a slippery slope to bad times, bad things. I think Sigelman should be in jail. He should be pardoned. And Hillary and Trump, neither one should be in jail. When the race is over with, Hillary is going to be president, and Donald should go buy a fucking island or something and sit on it. I want him to take his money and do whatever he wants. Like, just go quietly, please. Enjoy your life. Enjoy your retirement. Maybe Melania won't leave you. I don't know. Who can say? But he doesn't have to lose everything. He just has to go away. Just go away. And she's president, and enjoy yourself. But
exactly.
Any final thoughts on corruption?
I'm with you. Hashtag free Sigelman.
I know. I'm not sure. Maybe we can think of something. And if our listeners know any way that we could do anything for Sigelman, or what would be the best way to help his case, please let us know. Research this for yourselves. When you look up the Free Sigelman website and you look up some of the things his family's been doing, you're going to see what we're talking about. If you're not familiar with this case and you really look at it, you're going to see how crazy it is. Michael, what's your web address for us?
BlueInAlabama.com.
Of course, you can find me, Alabama Liberal. Join us next time for episode 42. Thanks for listening, everybody.